Hello, and welcome to Coffee to Close, where we talk to interesting people with passions and pursuits in and around Brisbane, California, that beautiful yet rowdy, fiercely independent town on the border of San Francisco. Our hope is that you will be inspired and that in the process, we will raise some money for our local nonprofits. Sit back and enjoy. I'm your host, Ron Davis. We are here today with Tony Press. Tony is a Brisbane resident, and he is an author, and he has some other interesting things that he'll talk about that he's done, but I just wanted to bring him on because he is a local guy doing some cool stuff. And so, Tony, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and just kind of how you ended up in Brisbane and maybe some thoughts about Brisbane and living in a small town here?
Okay, sounds like you could write a song about living in the small town. We moved to Brisbane only about 4 or 5 years ago, so we're definitely still new people in town, but we love it, absolutely love it. For the 14 years before that, we lived just over the mountain in the fog of Daly City, and we heard about this mystical place, and sometimes we'd see it going over Guadalupe Canyon.
Saw the breakthrough from the fog?
It was like the opening of The Simpsons. You know, you'd hear the sound.
Oh, yeah.
The blue sky.
That's pretty funny. So what's the maybe some of the main points that you weren't expecting once you got here and kind of put down some roots here a little bit?
I've never been a big city person, but I've always lived near cities. But I'd never lived in a town this small. And, you know, there are pluses and minuses. They talk about, you know, everybody knows your business, and that's a good thing and that's a bad thing sometimes.
Yeah.
But I love just walking around town and saying hi to people.
What's the one venue in town that you enjoy?
Well, there is this coffee house I hang out a lot called Madhouse. Shameless press publicity there.
That's funny. I wasn't even thinking of that. I was thinking, well, maybe he goes to the pool, or he's one of the pool guys, or library.
I sit in the park often in the sun, community park, and either reading or writing. Lately, more often it's been reading, but sometimes writing. Just sitting there, and what a place. You know, you hear the kids playing, you look up, people will come by that you know or you don't know, but you're just surrounded by beauty.
Cool. So we know you're an author. You got a book you wrote called Crossing the Lines. Before we get to that, tell us a little background on yourself. What other things have you done in your life?
I've had a rather strange career path. Undergraduate, a long time ago, UCLA. I didn't know what I wanted to be. Had no idea. And about 3 years after that, a good friend of mine talked me into going to law school, which I'd never considered in my life. I went. And I did work as a legal aid attorney for 4 years in Wisconsin and Arizona, then came back to California, and eventually became a criminal defense attorney, which surprised a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah. Primarily in Santa Clara County, little tiny bit in San Mateo County. Did that for about 12 or 13 years.
Any famous cases we may know of? What was the most difficult or the most interesting thing that came up in that time period for you?
Well, part of the reason why I stopped being a lawyer, actually, was I was kind of going nuts because I had some pretty serious cases. Some of them weren't that serious, except under the three strikes, you're out law, they became super serious. And I felt really ineffective and emotional about what was happening to my clients in some of those cases.
Yeah.
It was just hard to do. I have great praise and gratitude for my friends who are still doing it, but it was tough. Try and keep the diatribe to a short thing here, but, you know, if you commit a crime and I commit a crime, and if I've done bad things in the past, I should get punished more than you should. No question. You know, people's records matter.
Mm-hmm.
But that can go to extremes. And if I, almost no matter what I did in the past, almost, if I sell you $7 worth of some drug, I don't think I should go to prison for 35 years to life.
That's just insane.
You know, it's just judges didn't like it. I had jurors cry when they found out what they had done. The jurors didn't know it was a three strikes case. You couldn't tell them until afterwards.
Really?
Yeah, until the sentencing phase.
Wow, I've never heard that.
Yeah. I think it's changed now. But so if they found them guilty, then they'd say, oh, thank you very much. By the way, we need you to come back tomorrow, jurors. What? Because you need to find the truth or, you know, the validity of this person's prior convictions. Because he's being charged or she's being charged under these statutes.
And is that changed now?
It was changing when I was still doing it. And it's been more than 15 years since I did it. I'm no expert now. But it was changing then in that the judges wanted jurors to know what they were doing, what they were in for. So I don't know. You know, I'm no longer an attorney. You know, I was an inactive attorney for a bunch of years, and then I finally flat out resigned because I'm not going back. But you know, I loved it for a long time, and then I didn't. And I was lucky enough to change.
Well, it's good that you were able to change.
Yeah, I was.
A lot of people keep continuing doing what they don't want to do, and they're kind of become a drag to.
When I was shifting, you know, still doing cases, I'd be in the courtroom, but people knew I was about to change to my next career, which was to become a teacher. And several lawyers would come up and say, "Oh man, I'd love to do that. I've always wanted to be a teacher." They couldn't. Their mortgages were too high, or their debts, or their standard of living, or their view of themselves. You know, like, oh, I'm a lawyer. I'm used to being treated as a lawyer for a variety of reasons. Uh-huh. Or the legitimate, you know, just expenses. So I was lucky. I had a supportive wife. I had the opportunity. And also, fortunately, I never made a whole lot of money as a lawyer. So it was easy to shift. People think, oh, you're a saint, Tony. You gave up all that big money and power. I didn't have big money. I didn't have big power. I was just an on-the-ground lawyer doing good work. But so it was not a big sacrifice to shift over. In fact, wow, once I started teaching high school, wow, they pay me every month. Stress regular relief. Paycheck.
High school. Where did you teach high school at?
I taught in the fog of Daly City. I taught at Jefferson High School.
Oh, did you really?
I sure did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and that's why in our little town, you know, there's a lot of old-timers who went to Jefferson, but not many of the young people go there now, and I wish they did. I think it's a wonderful place. I taught there full-time for 12 years. It was a perfect location for me. Another reason why I shifted from lawyering to teaching, not just those big, ugly cases, but I'd have lots of little cases where it didn't really matter in some ways if my client got 2 months or 2 years or went home because their lives were miserable. Maybe they couldn't read or write. They couldn't get a good job. So, well, maybe if I help their younger brothers and sisters, then they won't follow in the footsteps. Wow. I mean, in general. You know, I mean, I went to a different community, but Jefferson was just perfect for me. You know, low income, struggling kids, struggling families, loads of second language learners, which I ended up being my favorite thing to do.
So you were able to provide, you were provided with another perspective that gave you a better vision on being a high school teacher, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I didn't start teaching high school until I was 47, maybe, 48. And I'd look around at some of our teachers who were like 25 years old, and some of them were fantastic. But I know I could not have been a good high school teacher at 25. I didn't know enough about the world. I'm not saying they didn't. Some of them were extraordinary. But for me personally, it was the right time. Absolutely the right time.
So then, when did you explore being an author, writing? How did that get started?
Well, about 15 years ago or so. Another thing I do is, and I won't go into any proselytizing or diatribing. Diatribing, is that a verb? I'm an English teacher, and I make up words all the time.
It's all right.
My grammar is just wacky. And I do a little teaching with adults now, still part-time adults learning English from other countries and other languages. And boy, you know, I pick up some habits. But so, anyway, for about 25 years, I've practiced Buddhism. And so I go on a lot of retreats, and sometimes there's lots of quiet times and a lot of reflection. And once I was sitting in there meditating in this beautiful spot in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and my mind was not clear. This story came into my head based on something that had happened to me or that I'd been, you know, a part of. Clearly, it wanted to be a story, and it wanted to be a fiction. It wanted to be a short story. It wasn't like I wanted to write a letter to somebody or write a journal entry or a memoir. So when I came out of there, I went and found my notebook and sat under a tree somewhere, or I don't know where, on a bench, and scribbled as fast as I could to try and figure out what I was doing. It was lousy at the beginning, but it was the beginning.
It's great. You know, they say, I was listening to a guy, David Allen. He's got a book and a podcast called Getting Things Done. And he's talking about your brain is only really built to create ideas, not to hold on to them. And so many of us, we have too much in our head. We're trying to keep our whole life in our head. And he talks about writing everything down, getting it out of your head, getting your head clear, and that your head really can only hold about, there are studies that say that your head can only hold about four things at a time, four ideas, and that you need to have a capture device, notepad, whatever, to write these things down as soon as you get them or they'll flee away and be gone. So I've taken the time recently in the morning time to do a little meditating or being quiet. I have found that some some ideas spark up when you can try to get rid of everything else in your head. So it's also, I think I read, it seems to be the new thing in like Hollywood and business, that everybody is meditating and being quiet. Oh. So they're sparking their creativity.
Mindfulness is the new kale, is the new, I don't know what.
Green drink, right?
Yeah. And those of us, from our Buddhist center and this and that, we can look at that and say, well, that's only part of it. It's important for sure, but there's mindfulness and there's, what do you do with it? There's compassion. You know, it's not just mindfulness in the scheme of making more money is not what I was taught.
Yeah.
But mindfulness in terms of opening yourself up to possibilities, absolutely.
It's good to be aware.
Yeah.
The first step to be aware of what your surroundings and so you can have all the input, the input that comes into you means something.
Yeah. And there's two things. One, I'm thinking of, I read recently the treasured poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti of San Francisco in City Lights Books, who's like 98, 99 now, and he said something like, I try to keep an open mind, but not so much that my brains fall out. So there's some balance in there of what you do. And the other thing you mentioned about, I do not leave the house without two pens and one small notebook.
Recently, I wrote a story just on my 30-year anniversary of being a real estate broker.
Yeah.
And I just pounded it out, and I didn't edit it. I didn't do anything. I just pounded it out one morning after spending about almost 30 minutes in a sauna at a hotel that I was staying at, spa sauna, and I was just being really quiet. And I just thought, what am I going to do to talk about this anniversary? It just flowed. I had no Facebook on, no TV on, no nothing on, and I just sat in a quiet, empty hotel room, and just it came out. So I'm finding this is really a good practice.
I think also, yeah, and for me, since that first experience of trying to write that story, I've been writing ever since, but one of the things that sparks writing for me, I walk all the time and I have my notebook and I'm see things or notice things or overhear something and that triggers something, but travel is really valuable for me. I mean, I love to travel anyhow, but if I'm in an unfamiliar spot or in a hotel room or in a cafe in some town I've never been in before, you just see the world a little differently. It's like, the difference between driving down the street and walking down the street.
Exactly. That's huge.
Yeah.
So do you have a little part of a story you could read for us?
Yeah, I have a tiny one. It won't take long at all. And actually, it's like we planned this. This will fit.
Okay.
This will fit with several things that we've been talking about.
And this is from the book Crossing the Lines?
It is in the book Crossing the Lines, which, and my last name is Press, like newspaper. Mm-hmm. I used to tell the kids in high school, hey, I'm in the First Amendment of the Constitution. Are you? Freedom of the press. But also my shameless press publicity machine will tell you this book is available in some bookstores and certainly online and all kinds of places and on Kindle. And
I'm impressed.
I'd be delighted. I've had a lot of fun with it. It came out several months ago, and it's been a ball. All right, here's a story. Well, it's in the book, and it was also published in a little journal called Everyday Fiction. I think that's where it was first. Café Los Quiles. Her dimples arrived almost before the little girl herself, and when she came in through the front door, the beads clicking to announce her arrival, her smile and eyes lit up the dark cafe. Open the curtains, we called, Luis and Ita and Letty and I, from our usual corner, and it was done. The new waiter, whose name we did not yet know, did the deed, and we thanked him as he passed us on his way back to the kitchen. This Oaxacan morning, the day after Christmas, was growing sunny, and the rays painted thin lines on the walls. I thought of walking up the steps to Cerro 14 and the viewpoint near the Benito Juarez statue. I hadn't been there in months, and it would be a good day to go. The girl is 4 years old, or possibly five, with pink tennis shoes and new blue jeans. Silver stars on her pink shirt spell the name Dora. What awaits her in the years ahead? She carries the promise of a grand life, a world and future impossible to imagine. And for us, the regular customers, at our regular little tables, with our coffee or chocolate and our bread, who knows? What is to become of us? We who once were young. Who can say? And more, do I really want to know? I decide that I don't, and I stand and leave my share of pesos on the tablecloth. Like the Irish poet, I will arise and go now. I will climb the hill alone today. As long as I can walk, I will walk. Tomorrow, if it be granted to me, I will see my friends again at our cafe.
That's great.
Thank you.
Cool. So are you working on the next one, the next book?
I've been struggling, not the classic writer's block, just kind of laziness. And other things have kind of gone on in our lives. Family things have come up. I don't know what my excuse is. But I just the last few days I've been organizing a bunch of things because there's a potential, I don't even know if I want to call it a novel, maybe a short novel, a novelette that I'd like to put together. I did a crummy draft of it, a couple drafts of it about 3 years ago, and it's time to look at it again because I would like, it's been so much fun to have a book. I mean, I'm not getting rich, I'm not getting famous, but I get to go to readings and I get to share things and meet other writers, and everyone is just genuinely happy for me, whether they're people I know or people I don't know.
That's a good feeling.
It is. It's a great feeling. There's this term in Buddhism called mudita, M-U-D-I-T-A, Sanskrit, I think. And it means sympathetic joy or joy in the happiness of others. And it's as opposed to what we often do, like, oh, you got a book and I don't yet, or, you know, that kind of envy, jealousy kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's just nothing but you're happy. That makes me happy.
It's great.
And I felt that so much. So I need to get writing.
Great. Good. Well, we love having you in town, and I've been happy to have met you and hung out with you a bit. And so thank you for coming on our podcast, my podcast here. And just to remind the audience, I have pledged to donate $100 per episode to a local charity here. And if anybody wants to match me, I'd be happy to accept that. And so our goal is for 50 episodes, and we're talking to interesting people in town and around and with a connection to Brisbane or nonprofit or what have you. Interesting people talking about interesting things. So thank you very much for coming.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Coffee to Close. Coffee to Close is a fundraiser for our local nonprofits and charities in Brisbane. And I will be donating $100 per episode to one of the charities or nonprofits in town. Coffee to Close is also sponsored by Davis & Company Real Estate. You can find us at rondavis.com and Madhouse Coffee, which is madhousecoffee.com. Both are located in Uptown Brisbane at the top of the main business district on Visitation Avenue at 400 Visitation. Come pay us a visit. We'd love to see you.